Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, I told you about our esteemed business panel. I'm going to introduce you to them now. It's Gina London of Leadership Communication, a leadership communications expert, and Bob Hoffman of Vista Executive Search. Good morning, one and all.
Good morning, Bobby.
Rant at the start of the show.
Morning, Bobby.
Great to be here.
Nice to be back and to be with you all. So, Gina, we might start with the recent flooding. We're hearing of overnight reports there of more problems in South Kilkenny and indeed in Enniscorthy. Businesses impacted by the storm may be able to apply for funding for 100,000. It's a very, very difficult time for businesses, but this is maybe a slight positive in all the negativity of the flooding.
Yes, Bobby. All the papers, of course, are talking about the ongoing impact and aftermath of this week's devastating flooding. And this particular story comes out of the Times with reporter Rona McCreevy talking about how the Minister for Enterprise, Peter Burke, is preparing this coming week to present for Cabinet a new proposal to increase the amount that could be awarded to these small businesses and the definition of what small businesses even mean. Because, of course, as you were just indicating, there's a lot of residents that have been impacted and there's a lot of small businesses that struggle with this type of incredible setback. So what the proposal says is that in order to now apply, you have to be capped out at 20 team members, but this measure would increase that measure, that number for your employees to 50. And importantly, the amount you used to be billed, if of course this gets passed, to be applied for, to claim, is it was capped at 20,000 euros. But now that companies that don't have enough flood insurance and other things that they may be struggling against with in the wake of Storm Chandra, they can apply for funding of up to 100,000. So that's a significant increase if it gets approved.
And one of the things about businesses that get flooded once, they more than likely will never ever get flood insurance again. That's the reality of it.
Agreed.
So if you look at somewhere like Enniscorthy, where there's been problems there, there are a number of businesses there that will have no insurance because they won't be able to get it.
Bobby, I drove through Bunclody on Wednesday, and it's quite sobering when you stop at a set of traffic lights and you look to your left and there are people dragging all the contents of their houses out onto the side of the road. To me, this is a horse before the cart scenario. Yes, the government are now going to be offering up to 100,000 for each of these businesses that have been damaged. I'd much prefer to see them put the 100,000 into flood relief programs in the first place. So this is, you know, this is just throwing money at the problem. It brings back to this groundhog issue of red tape in this country and the glacial speed that we roll out infrastructure. We need to be putting in flood relief measures now. They're doing it. But you talk to the people in Enniscorthy, they've been doing it for 20 years, but too slow and too little. So 100,000 is very welcome, but I'd much prefer it to be seen to be put into relief measures beforehand.
Gina, what about this infighting within Metair? And I know you're a communications expert, but it seems that there seems to be a real problem with who's responsible for what and who communicates what, with the result that the Joe Public is uninformed.
Well, and this gets to the point that Bob was just making about what's your process, what's your communications, and what's your implementation. So when I read this particular story that we're referring to is out of The Independent by Avon Murray, and it's talking about how did Met Aaron handle the forecasting of the weather reports. And as I kept reading the article, I kept thinking about the business divisions operating in old-fashioned silos. You've got communication connections or lack thereof between the weather forecasters and the flooding forecasters. And you've got the article talking about how Housing Minister James Brown first is talking about that he's criticizing the agency for having these two divisions not talking to each other. But then the article broadens out and talks about how, well, maybe it's the OPW that's the official flood warning body. Either way, there's a number of problems here about this whole process. And especially when you consider back to Bob's part about planning, forecasting, the forecasting plan and preparations. 10 years ago, there was a plan to put in place about how to properly manage the flood warning system. So is it lack of resources? Is it lack of personnel? Is it lack of management, oversight, leadership? The question is, how much is it forecasted? What's our process of warning? And what's the impact that should be prepared for in advance?
And when I read that article, after reading it, I was totally confused as to who was responsible for what.
Well, and that's the question at bay, is that we need to have a sequencing of what's the system, who's going to take ownership, who communicates with each other in what order. And that's what this is all bringing to light. So when you've got more confusion, that's a call for more improved communication.
Okay, right. Well, we'll leave it there. Let's move to European matters now, Bob. European economies are shrugging off the Trump tariff threats to report solid growth. So there were some solid numbers out of Europe. And there was a very interesting piece, I thought, in the Examiner about the EU having the assets to become a superpower in its own right. So it just needs to get on with it.
I'm going to whisper two things here. One is leprechaun economics, which was thrown around a few years ago. Listen, this is all about the growth of Europe. So the EU economy grew strongly in 2025. And this story is all about the fact that in the last two quarters, Ireland's GDP growth, and I know you're going to have an economist on later who will probably go into a bit more detail on this, but basically the country grew or shrank 0.6% in Q4 and 0.3% in Q3. And the definition of a, and this is the second word I'm going to whisper, recession, is two quarters in a row of negative growth. But it's lost in the overall headline, which is not really in this article. Overall, our economy grew by a whopping 12.5% in 2025. So technically, yes, we did. But overall, the entire year was just a boom. It led into a story we'll cover later on about the tax take and the American companies, etc. But all in all, we are in a very positive situation regards our economy.
And I think it's a positive, quickly story about how the EU's come together in the wake of the uncertainty and volatility of the Trump administration and the on again, off again tax tariffs. So,
I was going to ask you your thoughts, Gina, on the EU having the assets to become a superpower in its own right. I think it's a really good piece from the Irish Examiner. It really talks about, and I quote, "Fortunately, the EU has all the," excuse me. "Fortunately, the EU has all the assets it needs to be one of three or four superpowers. Its common market surpasses any other economy in size, and it can match anyone in terms of its alliances and soft power. While Western Europe is reckoning with anemic GDP growth, Central and Eastern European economies are developing rapidly. No US state has grown as fast as Poland in the last 25 years."
This is a great story. And again, it underscores the ability for the countries in the EU, from the West to the Central to the East, to come together and work together, build new alliances, which has been one of the outcroppings from the volatility of the United States. You can't depend on it. So go together collectively and strike new deals. Fire off your economic super bazookas that you've got and come together. And I think this opinion piece that's in the Examiner is a good one that really ties it all together to talk about what the opportunities are and what's already being taken place in the wake of what's been going on from the White House.
Bob, Cliff Taylor, we like him on this show because he talks sense, and he talks in a way that I really like, because he talks fairly complex stuff in pretty good layman's language.
You know me, I don't do corporate speak. I went to school with Cliff, and he was always geared for future stardom in media. His story is Trump is learning he can't always get what he wants, but neither can Ireland. And listen, the heroes of the Irish economic story to me are the IDA. You know, we handled four great waves of technology, the computer companies, the software companies, the social media companies, kind of dropped the ball on AI. But in general, the story is that the US has decided for some reason to look inward. And in the next 2 to 5 years, a lot of the American companies here will start to slowly move things back to the US, possibly. And his soundbite is, nostalgia for the way things were is not a policy. Or the other one I love is Mike Tyson's famous remark, everybody has a plan until they get punched for the first time. So we got to come up with a plan. We've got 3 to 5 years possibly to do this. When you build a pharma plant or a microchip plant, it's a billion. And it takes 5 to 7 years to build them. So these aren't things you can just pick up and move back to Oklahoma. You got to remember also that we employ as many people in the US as American companies employ here. About 200,000. Everybody keeps forgetting that. Biggest cheese manufacturer in the US, Glanbia in New Mexico. Cement Roadstone, biggest road builder in the US. So it is a two-way street. I think a lot of this story is to do with that Trump, it's a lot of bark and very little bite, and this taco expression that Trump always chickens out. A lot of his threats and his tariffs, he always seems to backdate. But I suppose to summarize it, US corporation tax will reduce over the next number of years, and we have got to increase our trade within the EU, which we're obviously part of, and China. And Micheál Martin was in Beijing last week.
I again, Gene, I'd be interested in your take on this as an American, but the average tariff on goods entering the US has risen sharply from less than 2% under Biden and the Democrats to around 14% now, which is 1 point, with the bulk of extra costs falling on the US consumer. Well, That's really the bit.
And that's why when President Trump, or when Trump ran on the idea that he was going to make the U.S. greater again, it was going to build, make quote unquote affordability happen again, and then he went ahead and set all these tariffs into place, the person and the people that are paying for it are the American people. The American farmers, for example, are really struggling because they don't have the ability to stand what's happening as they're forfeiting, as they're footing all this bill. So the Trump policies are having an impact in the U.S., and that's why this article here talks about what is he going to do in the wake of these impending midterms now, because the Democrats are for sure going to be running on this affordability promise that Trump hasn't delivered on in the United States. So he's urging Ireland, as Bob said, to be reassessing its relationship with the United States and also be looking at the investment in manufacturing that he's going to have to be trying to put more forward in the U.S. What might that do to some of the manufacturing plants, including Eli Lilly, that has all of these weight loss drugs in this plant that's planned here in Ireland? Will they potentially move it to the United States under pressure? I don't know, but there's definitely a call to Ireland to be refreshing its education skill policies, looking forward at the job markets, especially as Bob indicated in tech. And again, we haven't touched much on this, but do assess and figure out what's going to happen if this, we expect, the new Fed chair that Trump announced last week.
I was just going to ask you about Kevin Warsh. What do you know of him?
Well, what I've researched on him is that Wall Street, he had a history in Wall Street. He was a former governor of the Central Bank of the United States until 2011 of the Federal Reserve himself. So he's got the understanding. The markets went up a bit when Trump picked him. But there's also an interesting side note about him. He is extremely wealthy himself. His wife is the heir to the Estee Lauder fortune, billions of dollars. And his wife's father, Ron Lauder, has huge investments in Greenland and was one of the ones telling Trump that he needed to acquire the Danish territory. So follow the money, folks. Is he a moderate and will be good for the Fed in the United States, or is he another Trump stooge?
Wow. Bob, I've been interested in the story behind the extraordinary rise in the price of gold and silver. Two articles on this, one in the Examiner and one from the Times, I think, no, from the Independent. But again, one of them seemed to be a couple of days old because the price of gold has dropped and silver considerably over the last 24 hours, 48 hours. But it has really had an extraordinary run.
It has indeed. And this story really is as old as the hills. They say salt and pepper were the world's first currencies, followed then by gold. So we've all known that gold from biblical times has been where people go in times of war or times of uncertainty. And Trump has unleashed an economic war on the planet. So it's no surprise that gold has gone up to the point that it peaked at 4,700 euros for a ounce, I think it's called. It has dropped to 4,400 last week due to cooling of Trump's plans for Iran. But let's put this thing into context. If you lodge money in the Irish banks, you're getting between 0.2 and 2%. So let's call it 1%. Gold has gone up in 1 year since Trump arrived 100%.
Yeah. So silver's gone up four times.
Yeah, quadrupled.
From $30 to $118 for, I presume, an ounce as well. So really, along with the Swiss franc, gold is where the smart people rush to in times of uncertainty. But like everything has a peak, and it hit it last week. They both dropped about 8% in 1 day.
Yeah.
That's trillions, and it hardly gets a mention.
Yeah, it's the safe haven. And when you've got a volatility around geopolitics and the economy like we've had since Trump took office, then this is where people have been moving their investments. And that's reflected in this, even despite the downturn. It's still up overall.
Yeah.
Some good news for an Irish company. Danish Lego assets firm buys a 45 million galvanizing business, Galco. Been around quite a number of years. Owned, I believe, by four sisters. But this is an interesting development and a good news story for this company.
Oh, yeah. It's Ireland's largest metal galvanizing company, 300 people employed, and it's been bought by the Danish investment firm DOT or DOT. I honestly don't know how you refer to it. But the interesting thing, of course, is this investment firm, among its other assets, manages all the assets of Lego out. So that's an interesting just a little point. What does it mean to the people who work there? What does it mean into the future? Right now, it seems to be appearing positive. And then, of course, it does bear in how will it be managed and what kind of autonomy might Galco have as it's going through this merger, which is always a question when you go through an M&A.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's this company's first investment outside of their home market in Scandinavia. Galco, I know them well. I have a very large client across the road for them. And at their front gates, they have two steel warriors brandishing swords. So if you're in the steel business, what better entrance to your business than these two 10-foot warriors at their gateposts? But yeah, 46 million euro turnover in 2024. Their managing director is Ed Byrne. And they're a national company. They have facilities outside of Dublin in Waterford, Cork, Galway and Northern Ireland. So a real solid factory floor business that has been a great success, and somebody's paid a handsome price for them.
Yeah, good. Always a pleasure to report those sort of stories. What do we know about this new payment service, Zippay? We're told now that it's coming before St. Patrick's Day. AIB, Bank of Ireland and PTSB hope to stave off competition from Revolut and others, as we're told by Joe Brennan from the Irish Times, Gina.
Well, this is the first announcement, an overdue need for these banks, these three domestic, of course, Irish banks, to launch their person-to-person mobile app play, because I know, as any parent who's got a teenager, that you get a text and then you get capital letter text. You're like, I need, it's not because you want to spend any quality time with your mother. You just want some money. So you click your thumb over there, you pop that money in and it's done. And they're happy once again, because that's the way to make your children happy, is by paying them. So
are they too late to the market?
Well,
here?
In the market, I mean, Revolut is a dominant force. Yeah. Everybody has it. And the idea now that you're going to be coming up, I'm taking money out of my AIB account to put it in the Revolut to pay over my daughter. So am I going to want to put in another app on top of the app I currently have? I don't know. It's going to have to be super user friendly. So to be continued, watch this.
This radio station is going to ban me from saying red tape and glacial infrastructure, because this is another example of it. Bobby, you said it. 2020, they came up with the idea, the Irish Pillar Bank. So let's remind ourselves, the Pillar Banks, AIB, Bank of Ireland and PTSB, the smartphone banks, Revolut, N26 and soon to be Monzo of the UK. 2020, they came up with the idea, 3 years of wading through the treacle of regulation here in Ireland. They just gave up in 2023. There's obviously been some burst of energy and they've had another crack at it now. It'll be 2026, 6 years to launch an app. Now, by the way,
In Indiana, we say that slow as molasses in January.
Exactly. It was going to be an app. They've now decided to actually just incorporate it into, if you've got the Bank of Ireland app, it'll be just incorporated. So it won't be a new app, but 6 years to launch effectively a service.
A story by Eimear Harrington in today's Indo caught my eye as a man of the sea, somebody who loves boats. I often wondered what it would be like to live on one full time. And some of the numbers are articulated out here for us today, Gina. Houseboat dwellers spend significantly less on monthly bills, but upfront costs and regular maintenance need to be factored in.
Oh, this is I like these kinds of feature stories when you bring economy and housing markets and ways of living to life through a personal story. And that's what's done in this article. I think it's well worth a read, because what you get is the picture of life on a houseboat here in Ireland, specifically the Grand Canal in Dublin, where when I used to have an office, that's where the office was. Now it's back to the home office. But talking about this particular family, this woman, Jenny Wren, interestingly, as my grandfather used to call all wrens Jenny Wren, but not the bird, but the human, who's living on a Collingwood barge in the Grand Canal in Dublin, and she has to pay 278 euros annually for the mooring permit. The boat itself costs around $100,000. And then they get into the story about what it would take to actually paint it, upkeep. It is all significantly less if you were trying to buy anything. The smallest condo in the Grand Canal Dock area in Dublin would be 10 times that amount. So it's a lovely story in comparison.
Bob,
a different kind of lifestyle.
You're not tempted to leave your Wicklow home and take to the water.
I'm not a great seafarer, but this story ultimately is that classic heart versus head, because on one side you've this idyllic vision, the romance of a boat, and it is dramatically cheaper.
And then the heat is broken in February.
Exactly.
There's condensation.
They're smaller. There's more work involved. There are restrictions. So it's heart versus head, I think.
Okay, for our final story, I'm going to hand it over to you two. I had picked a kind of a soppy romantic one, but then we wanted to talk about methane and cattle.
Gina,
so why don't we do both?
It's all about hot air at the end of the day.
Why don't we do both?
So it's the lovely warm whispers that you might give to your loved ones. There was a survey that came out that's featured in the Irish Daily Mail. It's talking about the most romantic lines of all. Just in time, as we're moving into February and Valentine's Day, and it goes through a series of them thinking about the new movie about the old book, Wuthering Heights. Number 10 on the list is Whatever Our Souls Are Made Of, His and Mine Are the Same, of course, whispered there. And then there's another line, the top one comes from the film Sense and Sensibility. I don't know if it's also in the book, but again, this one says, my heart is and always will be yours. And Bob and I were talking about these lovely romantic lines, and also that part of that survey, the notes that many young people don't write these kinds of lines anymore in any sort of letter fashion. They might be doing it in a text, but it certainly is an opportunity to go back and think about the power of the written word and what it can mean in love. Although I will also say my favorite love quote comes from Oscar Wilde, which is more of an indicator of my own thoughts on the matter. And it says, as if your misfortunes weren't enough, fall in love.
Bob, over to you on the meat then, because I know you don't want to talk love.
Well, I was just going to point out, Gina gets the lovely romance story. I get cow flatulence. Okay, in a nutshell, basically the scientists...
Or in a bean shell.
Or a bean shell. Scientists have come up, we've all known that aviation takes 4% of the world's greenhouse gases, and cars, I think it's 3%. But the world's cows produce 25% methane, and we all know where that comes from. By the way, an Irish company produced seaweed that was supposed to fix the problem. It's 80 times more damaging than carbon dioxide, to put things into context. And they've come up with the idea that you can feed them tea, red wine, coffee, or dark chocolate to the cows, but actually beans, good old-fashioned beans.
There you go.
Stop them
reducing
by
10%.
There you go.
Okay, thanks for a great review of the business stories. Gina London and Bob Hoffman, enjoy your long weekend.
Thanks,
and
Bobby.
I appreciate you coming in this morning.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.